Good morning. Welcome to the Role of Parks in Healthography. I'm Zernaz Bashir. I'm Director of Health and Wellness at the National Recreation and Park Association. I want to say thank you for coming out here at 8:30 in the morning. It seems like a slow morning overall for APHA. So we have a really exciting session for you, just a little bit of background on NRPA. We are the national organization founded in 1965. We're based out in Ashburn, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., and we represent all the local park and rec agencies across the country. So that's about 12,000 agencies. We have 47,000 members, and that's representing over 100,000 local public parks. And so, you know, as a parent, we never want to say we have a favorite kid. That's just not a nice thing to do. So as an NRPA staff, I never want to say I have a favorite member, but Miami-Dade County is up there. We are just so proud of the work that they do, and they're just such a role model for our members. Some of the hot topics, especially in health and wellness right now, are park prescriptions, where physicians are actually prescribing wellness at the nearest local park, and we're seeing some fantastic health impacts related to that. There was a session yesterday we did on play deserts and really promoting access to parks and communities so that everyone has an opportunity for physical activity. And out-of-school times, park and rec agencies are the largest provider of out-of-school time activity summer camps as well. And so there's a need there to build healthy eating and physical activity standards with those kids out of school. And so Miami-Dade, those are some of the examples, but they touch on all of those areas. And so it's very exciting for them to be here, and they have a very interactive session planned for today. And with this small group, I think we can be a lot more intimate and hear from you all as well, who you are, who you represent. So why don't we actually start with that, and then I'll go ahead and introduce the speakers. How about we start with you? Just name and who you're representing. And very cool. Great. Excellent. Wonderful. Excellent. Thank you so much. And so, because it's a small group, do you all want to introduce yourselves, or should I?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, okay, so why don't we go ahead with the speakers.
I'll read my own bio.
I'm just kidding.
It's so nice to have a small group because we can just really chat. My name is Maria Nardi. I'm Chief of Planning and Research and Natural Areas Management for Miami-Dade Parks. This is such a great team, and we are really excited to be presenting here as a team, and I hope that we'll have other opportunities to share these projects and this work with everyone in other parts of the country. But I'm going to go ahead and start on what I would like to talk to you about, which is policy. And I guess as part of this, before I continue, I want to just give you a framework of the conversation that we want to have with you. And part of that is that when we think about the health impacts of parks for Miami-Dade County, we're really talking about a four-pronged approach. We're talking about policy, health in the built environment, recreation programming, and then how all of that comes together as partners and marketing that. How do we share this information with others? How do we reach out, and how do we implement that with our partners and that as a tool for communicating? So I'm going to open up with the part on policy and share with you some of the work that we've done to develop a master plan that really talks about a health plan for the community, for the people, for the environment, and for the economy. And we've come to learn that those three things really are important, and they go together to really emphasize the importance of creating active living for the community, which is one of our goals. So, as I mentioned, the four-prong approach to achieve health equity. And the first one, just to set a little bit of context for everyone, Miami-Dade County is in the southeastern part of the state of Florida. And we have about over 2.5 million people. It's a huge area. It's over 2,000 square miles, about the size of Rhode Island and Delaware, to give you a sense of scale. More than two-thirds of residents are Hispanic, 19% are black, over 51.2% are foreign-born. You know, there are various statistics that come out. We learned not too long ago 65 different languages, which include dialects spoken in Miami-Dade County, so that gives you an overview of the really diversity and also the interesting challenge that we have in terms of communicating our work and reaching out to people. Only 26.3 residents age 25 and over have a BA degree or higher. Young population, 21% of individuals are under 18 years of age. Median income, $43,000. Per capita income, $23,000. With over 19.4 living in poverty and at poor risk of health. This gives you a picture of some of our challenges. Now, you take those statistics, and put them into the context of what Miami-Dade County looks like. We are predominantly single-family home, automobile-dependent community, kind of the results of suburban sprawl. So we have a lot of traffic. We spend a lot of time on the road. And we've come to the realization that there is no room for expanding those streets. We need people to walk, but it's becoming a challenge in a infrastructure that's already maxed out because cars really are most important in many streets in Miami-Dade County. So how do we fix this? How do we create a livable community? And part of our challenge was asking ourselves those questions. How do we establish those health indicators that will allow us to reach a community that can reverse that trend? How do we take a community that has been impacted by a highway and all of these things and transform it into a walkable community? Through our findings, we found five key indicators that make up a great park system. And we've come to understand them as the public realm. And through this public realm, we're transforming Miami-Dade County. And this is a long-term vision. This is a vision for the next 25, 30, 40 years that we're incrementally implementing. But what we've learned is that everything that we do has to have principles of equity, access, beauty, seamlessness, sustainability, and multiple benefits. And I'll talk a little bit about each one of them. In Miami-Dade County, having this vision, the community vision for the community, is part of what we talk about as I mentioned, the health plan. And for the Parks Department, Parks Master Plan is typically nuts and bolts, how many soccer fields, how many baseball fields. And there's this other aspect to it that is really so much more broad and far-reaching. And part of that is developing, like I mentioned, through our research, these different elements. So one of the attributes that we learned as a key health indicator is that a place that's healthy has great parks that are accessible to everyone within quarter or half a mile. Our goal is just that the minute you step outside your doorstep, you are in a great park system. And that you are able to also get to great public spaces, providing diverse recreation opportunities throughout the public realm. We also came to learn that great natural and cultural areas are important. And what you see in the images to your left and to your right are pockets of natural areas in Miami-Dade County that are peppered throughout but have no real significance because people don't really come to understand them as significant landscapes. Our landscape is very harsh and it's not very sexy like North Carolina and all those beautiful mountain range green landscape. It's very subtle and very beautiful. So what we're doing in many of them is grouping them together. And because of the size of Miami-Dade County, you can imagine having multiple emerald necklaces like there are in Boston and Miami-Dade County that link all of these peppered sites together. So your experience is one that is really about an ecosystem, all of them connected through biotic corridors that move people and wildlife. And that these places transform communities. They spill out and become a sense of pride, create a sense of place for the community. All of these three hubs that I mentioned connected together through a system of greenways and blueways. And what we're planning in Miami-Dade County is about 500 miles of greenways, with the left one, the big swath that you see on the left here, as our most ambitious greenway, which is the Western Greenway, which is protecting the urban development boundary line that you'll hear Scott and Joanna talk a little bit about. So this system that we have is an ambitious one, but it's critical because, as you heard me earlier, one of our principles is access and equity. And while we may have 260 parks in our system with over 12,000 acres, including 26,000 acres of natural areas, that's a lot. If we don't have access to people from what we've learned, you're missing that opportunity not only to connect them to nature and all of the benefits that I think we know about, but really have them engage in the social aspect of being in a place, in a park to recreate. I wanted to show you and end up on this project, which is the Underline. And this is important for us in terms of really having the Underline, which is the dark green piece that you see here. This is the spine of our system of greenways that connects to the downtown area. And it's really the heart of the system of greenways in the community. Through this, we're building out a 10-mile corridor that's going to be for biking, walking, running, immediately connected to transit, connecting people from other places to this area, getting them to business and commercial districts, connecting them to key destination hubs, including the University of Miami and the downtown area. And then streets as the last element that connects people together, not just moving cars, but moving people and cyclists. So as part of what we've talked about, this master plan, engaging it and implementing it and shaping public policy and practices is key, institutionalizing the master plan. So what we learned is what became really important is to incorporate this into the Comprehensive Development Master Plan of Miami-Dade County. And this is a tool for us that allows all of these policies to be used or guide existing and future development by developers and, equally important, by the public sector. So right now, when you go to build something, you submit an application, and the developer shows a plan. And with this is one of the elements that they have to comply on, they are guided as to what they need to do. So connectivity, access to parks, all of the attributes that I mentioned to you, they must comply with. One thing that was missing is that the government, we, are one of the biggest builders of the public realm. And we often don't think of ourselves that way. So what ends up happening is that we may develop a complex with various government buildings there, but no access to each other. So this really provides that guidance, that tool to do that. Finally, through the Center for Disease Control, we had the opportunity to implement a lot of the different, those key attributes, indicators that I mentioned, through five different interventions. One access and equity study that my colleagues are going to talk to you about. Another one is implementing healthy options policy that provides healthy food choices with in park vending machines. Fitness zones or outdoor gyms that are placed in Miami-Dade County in areas of health disparity. Worksite wellness programs that include exercise, nutrition, and wellness activities. And last one, the urban design manuals that I mentioned for the public and private sector.
Great. Thank you.
So connecting from Maria's wonderful presentation about the policy and vision and open space master plan for the Miami-Dade Parks, Recreation, and Open Spaces Department, which we call MDPROS for short, I'm going to be presenting some work that our group has been doing at the University of Miami. Scott Brown, I'm at the Department of Public Health Sciences at the University of Miami, Miller School of Medicine with a secondary appointment in the School of Architecture, and have been collaborating with county parks the last couple of years. So without further ado, our work the last 10 years or so that I've been involved with as a faculty member has concerned the role of the built environment, specifically the built environment in the public realm, that which can be either seen or that can be traversed by foot or by car or bicycle from the standpoint of the pedestrian or bicyclist or motorist. Among some of the more relevant findings of our research team, we have found that a specific attribute of the built environment, namely the urban development boundary, which is the black line to the leftern part of the diagram, is showing the allowable extent of development into ecologically sensitive lands in Miami-Dade County, which is namely preventing development from extending into the Everglades. So we have a research study that was just published last month in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine that was looking at the relationship of distance to the urban development boundary in walking. And we did so in a population of recent immigrants that overwhelmingly reported that they had very little choice in where they lived when they arrived in Miami-Dade County, therefore addressing in large part the selection bias issue that characterizes much of the built environment literature. That is, a lot of studies have people who, to lesser or greater degrees, have some choice in where they live, and this was a population that said that over 70% of them lived at their present location, either to live near or with relatives in the U.S., and primarily the built environment was only a factor for 1% of the population in terms of either the distance to schools or workplace or the aesthetics of the built environment playing only a role for 1%. So our basic finding here is that for each 1 mile increase in distance from the urban development boundary, there was a statistically significant 11% increase in walking in the last week. And so the gradient of colors from red to green, the greener hues indicate that people are substantially almost over 100% more likely to have walked in the last week. And so I'm getting the 5 minute sign. But basically, our finding is that there are more destinations for walking further away from the urban development boundary, and it's basically a proxy for sprawl, that areas that are further inland were developed more single-use residential development. And so we're not saying that you shouldn't develop close to the urban development boundary. We're merely saying that given present conditions, if you're to provide more connectivity, destinations such as walking, more linear trails or connectivity such as is being proposed in the Open Space Master Plan, that might be promoting more opportunities for people to walk. I'm just going to also present briefly some work that has been funded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, as well as the Health Foundation of South Florida, that is looking at the relationship of built environment, walkability, and vegetation to the relationship of health of Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries in Miami-Dade County. So this is just a diagram indicating that we are looking at obesity-related conditions in a population of 250,000 Medicare beneficiaries. Without going into a lot of technical detail, we have a measure of vegetative presence from NASA ASTER satellite imagery that we are able to assess at the census block level, and we are able to generate the locations of the 250,000 Medicare beneficiaries ages 65 and older who lived in Miami-Dade County. What you see here from this diagram is that when we're comparing a poor level of greenery to a good level, we're comparing one standard deviation below the mean versus above the mean for Miami-Dade County, we find that there's a 15% reduction in the prevalence of diabetes, a 13% reduction in hypertension, and a 10% reduction in hyperlipidemia, which is high cholesterol. And these are analyses adjusting for age, gender, race, ethnicity, and also neighborhood median household income. And we also showed that an increase, again, from going from a bad level to a good level of greenery is associated with a reduction of 3 years reduction in biomedical aging of the population based on 49 fewer chronic conditions per 1,000 individuals in this population. So these are somewhat preliminary hypothesis-generating findings. We believe that these are evidence that having more greenery in your environment may be beneficial, perhaps by promoting opportunities for physical activity and possibly just time spent outdoors, because South Florida is a subtropical climate, so you need shade trees to encourage people to spend time. I guess we're out of time, so, but this is just illustrating that there may be, at the block level, that there may be things that could be done that could potentially have a substantial impact on the lives and quality of lives of the most vulnerable residents, including older adults, and we're in the process of doing analyses on the Medicaid beneficiaries in the county, and those analyses are still underway, focusing on low-income families with children. And so the reason we focused on the block level is that our prior research has shown that block level built environment characteristics, in our prior work we showed that, for example, having more eyes on the street features such as porches and stoops were associated with better social interactions and better physical functioning in Hispanic elders living in Little Havana, which is a neighborhood in Miami. And then we've also shown at the block level, having greater walkability such as land use mix is associated with better child behavioral health in over 3,000 public school children. So the block level is amenable to interventions, and should we identify, for example, a clustering where there's a very high level of obesity-related chronic diseases, it could lend itself to relatively inexpensive environmental interventions in the form of planting trees, which although that carries a cost, it may be much less cost than paying perhaps millions of dollars of extra health care costs for this population. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my colleague, Professor Joanna Lombard in the School of Architecture at the University of Miami, and she has a cross appointment to the Department of Public Health Sciences, and she's been a great collaborator to work with these many years. So.
So what you can see is that the park is in an interesting location because it's got schools around it. There's another park at some distance. If we did a 5-minute walk radius, we'd probably get out to that green line on the left and the 1, 2, 3, 4 yellow line. Sorry. Green line on the right, yellow line, the 4th one on the left. Okay. So a 5-minute walk might get you out to, where do you think?
Here. There and over here.
So within that radius, you could begin to think about what interventions you might suggest. And we have drawings to give you, we have aerial photographs, we have plans, and we have the magic post-its. So that as your team kind of imagines what you would want to do, which you can sketch on the plans and on the drawings, and then put like your top 5 ideas on the post-its. And we'll do this for about 10 or 15 minutes together, and then we'll put up the post-its and see what interventions people might suggest.
Thank you. Thank you.
as Joanna said, I'm Sarah Messiah. I'm definitely not solving the world problems by myself by any stretch. I'm really happy to be here today to represent the partnership between the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine and the Parks Department in Miami-Dade. And you might say, well, what is a professor of pediatrics in this huge medical school talking about parks? But it's a great, from the morning, segue into an example of programming and how it can be effective in promoting health and wellness in our children in our county, which, as you've seen this morning, Maria showed you the statistics. Our county is majority minority, very high population of low income, and that's predominantly what we serve in the program that I'm going to be showing you about. So the program is called Fit to Play. It's an after-school program, and it's, again, I wanted to really talk about not obesity, but I always see, like, and I've done it for years. My whole career is focused on childhood obesity prevention, and the first slide that goes up are all the horrible statistics in our nation, and in the spirit of healthography and the theme of this conference, I really wanted to show how one of our nation's largest resources can actually help with childhood obesity prevention. So Fit to Play has two major components to it. The first is physical fitness. Again, pretty obvious, right, that a park is a place that kids should be able to run around, enjoy themselves, especially in the after-school environment. They've been inside sitting down at desks for 7 or 8 hours. When we developed the program, this is almost 7 years ago now that we've been working on this program together, we wanted to elevate the program so that it could be a national example. And one of the first things that we did was chose an evidence-based program, an after-school program. We definitely didn't want it to be militant, boot camp style, calisthenic. Kids just don't like that. They like free play. And there was a program called Spark. I'm sure a lot of you in the room have heard of it. It was developed out of San Diego in the early 90s. It received a lot of NIH funding, very highly published evidence-based program. And they actually have programs now specifically for the after-school setting. So we sent what we call our park coaches to San Diego to get the training. And the manual is several inches thick, and it has almost 800 activities that are rotated on a daily basis with the children. And they get this every afternoon. The first about half an hour that they come into the program is for homework, and then they transition outside for anywhere from 50 to 60 minutes of free play through one of these activities in Spark. Another sort of game changer with Fit to Play was, instead of just hiring people to sort of monitor kids after school, or what Jack likes to say is, we didn't want to be just another babysitting service after school. We really wanted to promote health and wellness. So the job description was actually changed for people being hired in the after school setting, where they had to have health and wellness backgrounds. Now we have an entire team that has been educated specifically in physical activity and health and wellness. And the kids call them their coaches. So they have Coach Tiffany, Coach Houston, Coach, that's actually what the kids call them every day to promote that whole culture. And the second piece of the program, of course, is nutrition and health and wellness. And again, because a lot of our kids are coming from very low income backgrounds, a lot of them don't get exposed to a lot of good nutrition education information. So again, we sought an evidence-based program, and the Alliance for a Healthier Generation at the time was partnering with American Heart Association and the Clinton Foundation and came up with a program called Empower Me for Life. And so the first couple of years we used, it's a 9-session program that we rotated, but what we found was the kids were liking it so much that I had some of my doctoral students, my medical students, my master's students,
actually help us flesh that out to a whole second component. So we have one now for younger children and one for older children. So they sort of, as they go through the program year after year, they get exposed to new information. And it's based on the American Heart Association's messaging about healthy living, and it does include messages on sleep and physical activity as well as obviously eating healthy. And then where my team came in, when Jack and his whole team came and showed up in my office about 6 or 7 years ago, they said, you know, we really want this program to be elevated, but we want to show everybody how good it is, but we don't know what to measure. So that's where we brought in a whole team of pediatric specialists that then trained the coaches and a team of specialists in the field on how to do biometric measurements and so on with the children. So we decided on some very specific parameters as outcomes that are important just to measure child's health and development. And, of course, that's height and weight, so we can track their body mass index. We also looked at waist and hip circumference, because waist circumference in particular, there's a lot of debate in the literature about it's actually a better indicator of cardiovascular health than body mass indexes, especially our age group in these kids is 5 to 14. So we're seeing them go through puberty, which sometimes can have a big impact on not only their anthropometrics but their cardiovascular health too. And then we trained the field team, on how to do skin fold caliper measurements too, so we could again look beyond body mass index and get indicators about actually body composition changes throughout the year, meaning fat mass and fat-free mass, especially because the program was promoting fitness so much, we wanted to see if it was actually having an impact on the children's health. And that was also through blood pressure and pulse, that we taught them how to measure that on each child too. And then the other big piece that my team, we have a whole university IT team too, that we actually host all this data. So we have a whole database and data entry program in the field where the park coaches enter each child's information, and then it's uploaded and instantly goes over to the university, and then it gets dropped down into our database on our servers on our side, and then the biostatistics team then, of course, analyzes that data. And then as a team, we publish the results together. So the next few slides, I'm going to walk you through the latest findings, which are cumulative of 4 years now of data collection. So 2010 was the first year we officially started collecting data on these kids, and this is going to go through the spring of 2014. We're in year 5 right now. We just completed baseline for year 5. As you can see, we're evenly split, boys and girls, and as reflected of Miami-Dade County, very diverse. It's roughly half non-Hispanic black and half Hispanic each year. And I should mention, too, that in this sample, we have children with disabilities, too. We've actually published findings on, we have six parks that service children with disabilities specifically. So quickly, because I'm also getting the 5-minute warning, I'm just going to very quickly sort of walk you through the punchline findings. If you'll look all the way to the right-hand column, I don't know, I hate putting up big statistics slides because they kind of, everybody goes blurry-eyed. But I think the big message here, there's two. One is our kids that started the program obese for their age and their gender actually lost weight throughout the school year. Yet the kids that started normal weight stayed normal weight. So, you know, that's just as important as the kids that come in heavy losing weight. It's just as important to prevent those kids that come in normal from gaining weight. And we were able to do that. It was a statistically significant finding. Again, don't let your eyes glaze over, sorry. But this actually is my favorite slide because it shows that across the board, regardless of what great weight group you're coming into the program, your blood pressure is improving throughout the year. And you would be surprised at baseline how many kids that come in the program normal weight actually have hypertension, and that's simply from being sedentary, not being physically active. So as they progress through the program, we normalize their blood pressure, which obviously improves their cardiovascular health. And this, that last slide is a result of this slide, which again shows, regardless of weight category, everybody's getting more fit, cardiovascular fitness, strength, and flexibility we didn't have as much of a finding on, but definitely cardiovascularly we're seeing improvements across the board. And then finally, health and wellness knowledge increasing for every single group too, so they're learning about how to take care of themselves throughout the school year as well. We've been nationally recognized. We're very, very fortunate to have the First Lady come to one of our parks, not very far from that park, last winter to announce her official partnership with NRPA, and she recognized Fit to Play as an example of how programming can happen in parks in the after-school environment as a great example of how to get kids moving and keep them healthier. Quickly, lessons learned. As everybody has said this morning, it's just a great team. Everybody in my department knows that this is my favorite project. It's my baby because I think it's partially because every single person on this team really uniquely contributes. Communication is key. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not talking probably at least once a day to park staff about getting the tweaks. By no stretch has this study been perfect from the beginning. It's been a lot, and we're still in that process of really refining the program so that we can be a national model for other programs. And then finally, we make every single member of the team, from the newly hired coach all the way up to the people that are running the program, feel like a very valuable member and that they are doing this to improve children's health. Finally, in conclusion, I think, obviously I've run through these slides very quickly, but we've had some very key outcome findings, which are really hard to get in community-based programs like this and sustain them. You know, oftentimes with weight loss programs, you'll see a short-term effect, but then the maintenance phase, it goes away. And then finally, we've talked a little bit about prescription programs this morning, but this is our next big push. We're in the development stages right now at the medical school with my whole team of pediatricians to officially start this Fit to Play program as a prescription for our pediatric patients in the general peds clinics and the specialty clinics, namely endocrinology. So we're really excited about that too. So without further ado, last but certainly not least is our fearless director, Jack, who's going to talk to you about how now we promote these programs.
Well, I know I've got I start out 5-10 minutes in the hole here, so I'll be quick. I'm going to cut it real short. I just want to say, this is a parks director's dream, having a team that we've been able to put together here, because you don't find in our business there's a lot of anecdotal information that we give out, and people always intuitively know that parks are important to kids, and most of us grow up around parks and most of us are in programs, but who can really prove it? And this is a group that has enabled us to have a research-informed design, which informs operations, which in turn gets evaluated, and we do the cycle all over again, and it really works out in an unbelievable way. And Sarah touched on where things began with the University of Miami, and it was that simple proposition. I walked in with a group of recreators, and Eric Hansen, by the way, who's over here snapping, he's in charge of our recreation planning unit. He does all of our recreation plans for us, and we walked in and we met with Sarah and her team, and how can we prove to the nation that parks makes a difference? It was right at in the 2008-09 period when Affordable Care Act was just beginning to take shape and that whole idea was coming on board. How can we get a part of that? And very simple proposition. And second, how do we make a national model out of it? And, you know, and how do we start to measure it? And all of that was also, you know, that's the programmatic side. The built environment side was just as important. And Maria talked about the open space master plan. Well, that's where Joanna and Scott come in. That's how that whole connection consolidated our effort on both fronts. So, partnering with mass media. I'm going to talk specifically, since I can't go through the entire thing, I think I'm just going to concentrate on the partnership because we heard some of the things about our challenges, and the demographics are really, really tough in our community, not only because of the diversity, but also because of the 82% of the respondents in a recent 2013 Miami-Dade Community Health Needs Assessment Household Survey exhibit one or more of the following cardiovascular risk factors: overweight or obese, 62%, no leisure time, physical activity in the past month, 30%, high blood pressure, 33%, high cholesterol, 33%, cigarette smoking, 10%. There's a lot of risk factors that go along with it, the fact, and how do you communicate that? We, by ordinance, have to communicate in three languages, both, the English, but Spanish, predominantly Spanish now in reaching the Spanish market, and then also Creole for our Haitian population. Public health, we know how public health is. Partnerships are a force multiplier, and I just wanted to throw that up there because for us, these kinds of partnerships are, and for I think everybody in the public health field recognizes partnerships as the answer. Government cannot do it all. As a force multiplier, not only does it create better market development because of the resources of the partners there, but it also allows us to drill into, to penetrate the market of the constituents that are of each individual partner. So it allows an expansion of that as well. So partnerships are really, really important. Our folks at the Hitachi Institute have talked to us about the partnership readiness factors and how do you identify those partners that are really the ones that you want to get involved with, because not everybody's a good partner. There's a lot of folks that will come up there, but, here's a very simple four-step. They share not only the vision, but the vision for change. That change does want to be made, that there is credibility in the partners. So that, enthusiasm is one thing and sweat equity is great and we need that, but do we have the credibility among the partners? Is there a commitment to invest, and is there leadership with the authority to commit those investments the way they need to be made? If you do that, then you've got readiness for partners. And I think, certainly the partners that we've developed are clearly, have those factors. The University of Miami, just so you know, this all what we're talking about here is a subset of the Communities Putting Prevention to Work program. There's a lot of initiatives that go on in Miami-Dade County. And the CPPW, as part of the CDC, there was a $14.7 million grant that was awarded to our local health department. We were a beneficiary. I think we did about $1.2 million or something, creating policies and manuals that would help make sure that it was not committed to programs. These were things that were going to change things in the community. So this is sort of a subset, the Healthy Weight Initiative, looking at the obesity epidemic, focusing in on one aspect, because there's an awful lot of things parks touch and certainly a lot of elements of community health. So the University of Miami, CTSI, and this is the $20 million grant. I don't even know how to explain what you guys do, but it's an NIH grant that came in for $20 million to the University of Miami, and it's basically take research and find a way to get it implemented. And I think in a real basic way, that's exactly what we're doing here. The Miami-Dade County Health Department represents the connection to the CDC, our state Surgeon General, and state health departments. The Health Foundation of South Florida, Pete's here in the back, and one of our great partners, their mission is to fund those projects that create prevention throughout the communities of not only Dade, but also Broward County and Monroe County as well. The Miami Herald, David Landsberg, personally as the publisher, he's now with Goodwill Industries, but he brought the Miami Herald into the mix because he had a personal passion for an affinity to the Healthy Weight Initiative. So bringing them in as a major media partner was important. And the University of Miami Pediatrics Department, Sarah and her team, for the evaluation and quality control. And then, of course, us, Miami-Dade Parks, we're the implementers. We're the ones that, and I think, in the CPPW, it was about where we work, where we educate, where we live, and where we play. So we were that fourth, where we play. That's where we fit into everything. Our partnership certainly educates, communicates, it elevates community aspirations. This is one of the challenges, that second one there for us, because of the cultural divide that exists. Not everybody has the aspirations because so many foreign-born residents are there. Most of them are just glad the kids didn't get kidnapped on the way from school, to and from school in the morning, and that's just fine. So, do I need a park every 5 minutes, 10-minute walking distance? They're just happy the way things are. So elevating the aspirations, creating the consumer demand that will bring the attention to the elected officials to build out a system of connected parks is a real challenge in our community. There are an enlightened group, an educated and enlightened group, but I think Maria showed a statistic of maybe 23%, which with college degrees in the community, which is pretty low. So, the model, and we incentivize and motivate the modeling of the behavior. That shouldn't say website, that should say worksite wellness. We're very big on creating that within our own organizations that we model the behavior. And it was important to change classifications in our own parks department so that we didn't have the glorified babysitter image anymore, but we were practicing what we preach. Very important to it. So we narrowed things down, and it was the childhood obesity epidemic that became the most important thing, and it was the thing that we could measure and the thing that we were gaining traction in. There are a group of interventions that Parks and Recreation is involved in the CPPW and in a community health plan. I'm just going to focus in on those first couple up there, we are involved in all of these, and legislation became a big driver. We were instrumental in getting the legislation passed for healthy vending in the community for parks. We also did the tobacco-free parks. We couldn't pass it in ordinance form, unfortunately, but we did get tobacco-free in parks and around ball fields and playgrounds and things, and were able to sign it all. But Fit to Play and the health zones are the two key, and the brand, Fit to Play itself. Because we're talking about how things resonate and how people begin to understand them better. And branding in its most simplest definition is, the associating of your product or service's name with an image in people's mind. So, we began to change that image of parks. And, I have a little brochure here we did all the standard, a lot of smiles and a lot of activity and sports and everything that we did was smiles and that, but we introduced the doctor into this. We introduced the medical piece into it in a way to begin to create that image and that brand that this was not just an after-school program where kids went to play on a playground, as important as that is, but it is something that would be measured. We wanted to create those images that said that that this is a program that is evidence-based, and we will guarantee your children positive results, which we have been able to do. The other part of it is that it is affordable and accessible. We created the in the brand, we wanted to make sure that it wasn't an elitist after-school program for kids who could afford this. This is kids. 50% of our parks are in low-income areas of our community park system. The other 50% can sustain themselves on after-school program. Most of these are scholarship kids, or we just give them a free ride. They're not paying a dime to get in there. We use corporate. We have the Parks Foundation of Miami-Dade County. Dick Anderson, former football player for the Miami Dolphins, is the president, and he raises money for scholarships, and that's what keeps things going. So that's that's sort of the health program side, and then the built environment side, the self-guided side, was our outdoor gyms, and through a partnership with Trust for Public Lands, with the Health Foundation of South Florida, we've built 14 of these already, and we've have I think up to 24, I want to say, Maria, on the drawing board right now. So these are more and more of these are coming. And, you know, but again, without that partnership, without the funding source of a nonprofit on the team that is a part of addressing a broader health problem, we would have never been able to achieve these outdoor gyms. And then I think the ultimate, Sarah tapped on it, the ultimate compliment to the program was made by Michelle Obama, who actually said that this is the only program in the United States that has actually published the results that prove that after-school programs make a difference in kids' life and are committed to that evidence-based model. So it was very, very important and very affirming to what it was that we were doing. So creating awareness. I guess the rest of this was going into, you know, kind of mass media campaigns, but that'll actually end up on a whole other discussion. So why don't I just wrap it with that? And, you know, I just, from a park and recreation professional standpoint, the association with the NRPA and the fact that the NRPA, and like the NRPA and their pillars of conservation, health, and social equity, the Miami-Dade Parks Department's pillars, the things we advocate for are conservation, health and wellness, and placemaking or community building. I think it's that relationship with the NRPA, with our state agencies, you know, that really help us benchmark the best programs, help us get the most cutting-edge information that we can. Hopefully we share that cutting-edge information with them, and it kind of goes through the network like this. And then, you know, before long, you all who may have had no, thought of ever before, you've now become an urban planner, and you're now planning housing and park development. So we get everybody involved. So I'll wrap it with that, and I will open it up for discussion. If there's any questions that you'd like to ask me or our panel, please do. We have actually. Well, it's interesting because Sarah and I there's a I think in Fort Lauderdale, Phil Thornburg, the parks director there, is actually one of our assistant directors who has retired, has been following this with a software program that has been that she's determined to get developed that will bring this all together and incentivize for children, basically an app that allows them to record everything they're doing. She's actually working with Fort Lauderdale Parks and Recreation, not Broward. Broward Parks is they don't really have a community park system, so. But yeah, we'll work with anybody that's interested in it. Well. It is, and while we share it with everybody, Fit to Play, the term that is actually a trademarked, registered trademark, and but yes, everything there, the essence, Sarah shared it with you. If you download this PowerPoint, you've basically got all of the elements. I'd be more than happy to give you that you could want. But yes, we do share this. Listen, it's not rocket science. I mean, it's a program that keeps kids up and moving. It combines a nutrition education piece, and it combines good healthy activity. So. Ah, Pete, this is what Pete and I were having a breakfast yesterday about measuring those and seeing, because we are beginning the process of looking at a measurement tool to do that. I think we have some observations are being made. We installed one at Gretney Plateau Park that we built in partnership with WPLG TV10. We actually built a park based on this whole, everything we're talking about here. And we're at University of Miami students. Whose class is it? Scott's your class that's out. His class is out there right now. He's got the students out there seeing who's using them, what times of day, and making some observations. But we need to do that for all of them. So Pete and I are going to talk about funding that kind of research project.
Thank you.
Pre and post, yep. Good. You want to take a poke at that? Especially if you got some ideas, because we are, you know, it's tough, and certainly in our environment, we've lost about 35% of our workforce in the last 6 years to budget cuts. We've lost more than 450 full-time. We've lost entire classifications. I don't have entry-level full-time park managers anymore. They're all part-time, no benefits, with a turnover rate of 30% and more a year. It is unbelievably hard to operate in this environment, and who is going to, how do you grow people into jobs when that's your entry level? I mean, and we're big. I mean, we're a big organization, you know, but I see a collision happening for us 5 years down the road with all the retirements, me being one of them. I've got about 2 years left trying to hardwire in everything that we're doing here permanently into a workforce so it'll continue after I go is a challenge, so.